This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, June 17th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, much is being said in the news about a labor shortage. We'll take a look at how the lack of affordable housing ties into that equation. As climate activists and some members of Congress push for a Green New Deal and civilian climate corps, we'll look at green jobs in Colorado. And this time on the Cannabis Report, we take a look at some marijuana news out of Boulder regarding an attempt by some city staff to add vaping devices and cartridges that transport cannabis to the voter-passed anti-tobacco ordinance. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then it's the new edition of the Trends Podcast with Rosana Longo. This time, she looks at vaccine hesitancy. Then at 9:30, a mix of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is coming up, so stay tuned to your community radio station. First, we'll start with the headlines. Metro Denver ranks among the worst urban areas in the country for air quality. That's according to the new city ranking report released by the American Lung Association. Metro Denver ranks 8th on the list, and Fort Collins comes in at 17th. With the exception of Phoenix, Arizona, every other city on the ozone list ranked worse than Metro Denver is located in California. And speaking of ozone, the Colorado Department of Public Health and the Environment has released yet another ozone alert for Douglas, Jefferson, Denver, Western Arapaho, Western Adams, Broomfield, Boulder, Larimer, and Weld counties. The ozone action alert is in effect until at least 4 p.m. today. It calls on residents to avoid idling in cars and to combine errands to avoid unnecessary trips and limit the use of non-electric vehicles. Health authorities have released ozone action alerts for most days this week. Ongoing conditions of heat and drought are fueling wildfires in the region. According to the National Interagency Wildfire Center, 7 large new fires are burning in the Northern Rockies and Rocky Mountain areas. This includes the Column Fire in Colorado's Moffat County. Nationwide, 33 large fires have burned more than 360,000 acres in 10 states. The NIWC says more than half of the 33 uncontained large fires are in the Southwest and Great Basin areas. This year has been the worst on record for the number of fires reported year-to-date since 2011. A recent report calls on federal and state agencies to update land management plans and to use the best available science to protect big game migration corridors. Colorado has taken steps to prioritize corridor protection in order to reduce wildlife vehicle collisions and protect a natural resource seen as a big economic driver in the state. Eric Galatis has more.
A new report backs up Colorado's efforts to tap the best available science, including advances in GPS and radio tracking technologies, to protect big game migration corridors as animals move between winter and summer feeding ranges. Dan Gibbs with the Colorado Department of Natural Resources says with some 70,000 people moving to the state each year, protecting corridors is essential to reduce the number of collisions between vehicles and wildlife on Colorado roads.
And try our best to really, incorporate whether it's underpasses or overpasses or other mechanisms that we can put in place to really protect the animals, but protect the motorists as well.
He points to efforts in Summit County to address the loss of some 2,000 animals each year, mostly deer and elk. After overpasses, underpasses, and fencing were installed, the number of annual collisions dropped from a high of 97 to just 2 accidents last year. Madeline West with the Center for Public Lands at the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, the group behind the report, says Colorado is on the right track. In 2019, Governor Jared Polis released an executive order to prioritize big game migration corridor conservation, and in 2020, the Colorado Bureau of Land Management and the Department of Natural Resources agreed to amend the state's 10 management plans.
They agree that this needs to happen, that it's important for big game migration conservation, and they want to do it consistently where the state wildlife agencies are using their science and data to inform management on BLM land.
Gibbs says protecting wildlife and their ability to safely access seasonal habitat is also important for keeping Colorado's economy strong now and in the future.
Hunting, fishing, wildlife viewing is a $5 billion economic industry for the state of Colorado. So the more that we can enhance and protect our wildlife resources will be the gift that keeps on giving for Colorado.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
Boulderites will be able to vote on a measure this November to lift the city's occupancy cap. The housing rights campaign, known as Bedrooms Are for People, exceeded the required number of digital petition signatures required to get their measure on the ballot, and the city certified the petition this week. The city of Boulder currently prohibits more than three unrelated individuals from living under the same roof in most cases. If approved, the Bedrooms Are for People initiative would tie occupancy to the number of bedrooms in a house. Today's weather outlook shows hot weather will continue. Forecasters predict a high of 99 degrees in Boulder with a chance of windy gusts. Lows tonight of 65. Slightly cooler temperatures are expected tomorrow and Saturday with even a chance of rain. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, it's 68 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Businesses across the West are struggling to find employees this season, so much so that many are cutting services or hours, and soon some might have to close completely. Will Walkie from KHOL in Jackson, Wyoming, has been talking to business owners in his area and reports on what they say is the main reason for their dire labor shortage: a lack of affordable housing.
A rambunctious mix of German Shepherds, Poodle Puppies, Chihuahuas, and more are all interacting with each other at Dog Jack's, a kennel and doggy daycare south of Jackson.
Do you ever get sick of the barking or not?
Really? Just tone it out.
Just tone it out. Yeah.
It seems completely chaotic, but the owner of the business, Guru Sasurbude, says that's actually the point.
Humping is very common. Barking in the face is very common. Trying to fight with somebody, even their social dogs, is very common. We keep all that at bay. That's our job.
Sasurbude has owned Dog Jack's for 2 years. He's originally from India and moved here under a J-1 visa. He also says no other kennel in town handles as many dogs as he does, somewhere between 50 and 100 a day.
Like I personally work and put my energy into a dog to make them socialize so that when they go out on a trail or in a party, they are behaving very well.
Dog Jack's also usually provides training and grooming in addition to doggy daycare. But a few weeks ago, Sasurbude had to suspend those services because he can't find enough qualified employees. He normally needs at least a dozen people to run his business. Right now, he only has four.
There is literally no groomer in 50-mile radius. And people are crazy. They call us every day. At least 10 people call every day. Man, we are losing. So the previous owner made almost $400,000 on grooming. We are missing that revenue just because nobody can find freaking housing here.
Sasurbude says he often gets applicants who are ready to take a job, but then they have to bail because they can't find a place to live. He and his wife, Priyanka, have had to move into an apartment above Dog Jack's themselves to save money. Priyanka works as a cleaner in town and often helps at the kennel, but the couple is starting to burn out.
Just to give you a general idea, I haven't had a day off in 3 months, and neither she. 3 months, and we work 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. That is a lot on us, too.
Sasurbude says he's seen increased demand for his services this year as more people are moving here and buying or adopting pets. But he's still had to close on Sundays and is considering shutting down on Saturdays as well because his limited staff just can't handle the workload. If these trends continue for another 6 months, Sasurbude says he'll have no choice but to shut down completely.
I have tremendous amount of business, but no way to provide it. Like, I'm the only person who's an experienced handler at the moment in the whole facility. And we get 60, 70, upwards of 100 dogs. I cannot manage 100 dogs. This is inhuman to dogs and me.
Dog Jack's is far from the only business affected by this season's labor shortage. The Teton County Library recently announced that it has to close on Sundays, and the rec center is also limiting its hours of operation. But perhaps the largest sector struggling right now? Restaurants.
Crazy times.
It is.
Over Teton Pass in Driggs, Caroline Personette is working behind the bar at Royal Wolf, a local dive bar with a pool table in the back, and vintage neon beer signs hanging on the walls. Personette is bar manager, and she says the restaurant never used to struggle to find employees because it's such a fun place to work. Not so much now.
It's hard. I mean, both front and back have just been short, and that's the reason why we are shut down on Wednesday. Just not enough people to keep us open 7 days, and not enough applicants. People apply and then don't show up.
Many of Jackson's most famous restaurants are limiting their hours, too. Graham Swain owns and operates several restaurants in Jackson and in other states. He recently had to cut a day of operation at Pallet, one of his businesses north of town.
So we closed down on Sunday, and it was just it's our employees that are at their exhaustion point early in the season. You know, we're used to it in Septembers after a bludgeoning that you have over the summer and everything, but we're having it early season.
Swain says he's also been pitching in as a busser, dishwasher, and host over the past few weeks just to keep Pallet running.
And it was probably one of the worst services I've ever put together in my total restaurant history.
That's when he made the choice to cut hours a few days a week.
And I'd rather protect my brand and our name and our employees and shut down than service the public.
Swain's worked hard to try and retain workers, including raising wages, but he's still never had this much of an employee shortage. He says it all comes back to housing.
A chef of ours from another restaurant in another state that's come here, and this last time, I couldn't even get a house for him. I had to put him on a camper on my site.
Like Sasu Berde of Dog Jack's, Swain says he's, quote, one broken leg away from closing some of his restaurants down entirely. Peak summer season is when his business makes most of its money, so he's losing revenue with every hour he can't stay open.
So when you see great restaurants, when you see them closing down on a summer night, on a weekend summer night, you know damn well there's an issue.
In light of the situation, Swain is asking folks, if they can, to tip a bit more than usual. He also urges the local government and private developers to build more affordable housing, and fast.
When I leave a place and don't go there, that's horrible or whatever. You don't want that. And we're not there, but I mean, we're flirting with it.
Ryan Newray, a board member for the housing advocacy organization Shelter JH, agrees that the community is approaching a breaking point.
Businesses have reached out to their representatives saying, we need immediate rent relief. We need something from our local municipality for relief now.
Newray advocates for real estate transfer taxes and higher lodging taxes as potential solutions. But that revenue generation might not come in time to help businesses like Dog Jack's.
If the entire community doesn't think it's an essential business, they need to rethink. Because when we are not here, they're going to start realizing that.
Sasu Berde also points out that several local elected officials take their dogs to his kennel and used to get them groomed there. Maybe, he says, it'll take him closing down for some of them to realize just how bad the employee shortage has gotten in Jackson Hole. Will Walkie, KHOL News.
Climate activists and some members of Congress have been calling for a Green New Deal to help the economy recover from the blows of the pandemic. Part of the climate-focused infrastructure plan calls on the creation of green jobs to help the nation transition to green energy. Before the pandemic, one of the fastest-growing sectors of the labor economy was clean energy. For more on green jobs, I spoke with Jim Burness, founder and CEO of National Car Charging. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. Good to be here.
First, tell listeners a bit more about what it is that you do and where.
Sure. Well, our name is true. We work all over the nation, but Colorado is home. We sell and install electric vehicle charging equipment for pretty much every kind of vehicle out there.
Colorado passed a number of climate measures this session, including there was a transportation bill that to expand the electrical vehicle charging infrastructure. Can you give listeners an overview?
Sure. There's a lot of work that's going to be happening in putting in infrastructure for electric vehicle charging, and some of it's coming from the utility, some of it's coming from government. A lot of government agencies, cities, et cetera, are converting their fleets to electric. So there's one element to it, but also making sure that there is adequate infrastructure for the general public. One of the things that we've known for a long time in electric vehicles is that having adequate charging infrastructure, or the lack thereof, is the biggest barrier to adoption. Customers want to feel comfortable that they're going to be able to charge anywhere they go. So A lot of it means having charging in visible places and just building up that confidence level.
Now, here in Boulder, it's fairly common to see car charging stations. Is Boulder an anomaly, or is this something that's just becoming more general throughout the country?
I would say that Boulder is ahead of the rest of the nation, but it will definitely be the new normal. We're seeing that in Denver and other parts of Colorado as well, some areas more than others. But Boulder has certainly embraced it a little bit faster than the rest of the nation.
And in this push to expand the infrastructure for electric vehicle charging stations, what types of jobs are available and what do they pay?
Sure. Well, there's a wide variety of jobs. That's one of the things I love being in this clean energy sector is that it really does touch all sorts of different elements of the economy. Our company is mostly a sales organization, so you know, those are pretty good paying sales jobs. But you know, we work on a day-to-day basis with electricians, which are blue-collar jobs, but also a fantastic way to earn a living. And our electricians often will work with other trades, landscapers, concrete workers, boring companies to bore electrical conduits underneath parking lots, et cetera. So there really is a big add-on effect. Our electrician that we work with a couple different firms, but one that we work with the most, they've expanded their from one person to four in the last couple of years. And that means need to go buy an additional pickup truck, so that helps the car dealers. I mean, it really does have a multiplier effect.
In your experience in the field, do you find that the demand for this infrastructure is really fueled by consumers, or does it need a push from government incentives?
It's a little bit of both. We do have a lot of customers that are government agencies. As I mentioned before, a lot of the state agencies and municipalities are converting their fleets over to electric. But at the same time, there's a lot of private demand. We work with a lot of apartment buildings and condominiums, and 80% of all charging happens at home. And we have about half of our population that lives in multifamily housing. So that means that if you are a apartment complex and you don't have electric vehicle charging, you're telling people that they have to go find somewhere else to live if they want to own an electric car. So a lot of the multifamily developers are finding that this is quickly becoming an amenity that they need to have to stay competitive.
And what incentives are currently available to help consumers transition to clean energy?
There's a lot of different incentives across the nation. But right now in Colorado, there's two main incentives that we see in play. There is the Charge Ahead Colorado grant program. It is a competitive grant. It opens three times a year. But you can get up to $9,000 for a dual port level 2 station, which is kind of the moderate speed charging. We see about 20 miles of range in an hour for that, or $30,000 for a fast charger that you might find at a convenience store, for example. And so there's that from the state, and that is statewide. There's one program for the Denver metro area, another program for outside the metro area, but they're identical. And then there's also a 30% federal tax credit that you can get from federal taxes if you have the tax appetite for it.
And how would you rank Colorado more or less in this overall nationwide look at where supports for clean energy transition are?
Yeah, almost any measure, Colorado is going to be in the top 5 or top 10. California obviously leads the pack in a lot of different ways, but for a state our size, Colorado definitely punches above its weight.
Jim Burness, CEO of National Car Charging, thank you for joining us on KGNU.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report, this time taking a look at some cannabis news in Boulder. I'm joined by our cannabis correspondent, Leland Rucker. He is the senior editor at thenewsstation.com. Leland, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be here.
Okay, so give us this update on what's going on with cannabis in Boulder.
Well, I looked at the Daily Camera and the reader comment was ridiculous. Don't they have more pressing problems than this? And it's a comment on Facebook about the Boulder City Council considering an amendment to the electronic smoking device tax. That's the ESD tax. So Tuesday night, Boulder City Council, in a second reading that included a public hearing, voted just to give direction to staff against adding vaping devices and cartridges that transport marijuana to the anti-tobacco ordinance that voters passed last November. Staff, through City Attorney Kathy Haddock, argued that that was the intent of the original ordinance, but that staff had messed up and wanted to correct the record, and that the original intent was to tax both cannabis and tobacco vaporizing products. They didn't make a very good argument.
So what did they see as the ultimate aim of the bill? What was the goal there?
Well, I think it comes down to, is the bill aimed at tobacco, or is it aimed at tobacco and any other smoking products? And Kathy Haddock, the city attorney, said that the language changed over the years, and she mentioned that Boulder has a high number of teens who use marijuana. And council was pretty opposed to the entire idea. Right away, Bob Yates asked why she didn't use the name of the ballot issue question in her presentation. And the ballot issue question that voters were given focused exclusively on tobacco, and it specifically said tobacco vaping products. And Yates said that that should be good enough. He was on the council in 2019 when this took place, and he says, my intention was that it be limited to tobacco and nicotine. Councilman Mark Wallach keyed on the words, or any other substance, which is what Haddock was using as her argument, any other substance. He said he was troubled by the whole thing. He doesn't support vaping of tobacco, but he says, I tend to doubt that people thought this was anything but tobacco. And I think he's right there. He said it was unfair to stretch the language to cover something that he isn't sure it was intended to cover, and that Tabor restrictions might force a vote of the citizens to actually make this happen. So what became as a simple change quickly became something else, wound up an hour and a half of discussion. Rachel Friend at one point said, we're not experts, and this no longer feels like a quick cleanup measure. And that's exactly what was going on. Junie Joseph worried about the projected $5,000 fine for anyone found selling the wrong thing. And she objected because in Colorado, all these things are legal. How can we, you know, do that? And at the public hearing, Jason Dahl, manager of the Fitter, the place up on the hill, longtime head shop on the hill, they sell no tobacco products at all. And he reminded council that before it starts adding things to the ordinance and things that should be illegal, the city should enforce the original teen ban on tobacco. He says, you can't stop vaping. Why add stuff? And I think that made a lot of sense.
You know, it makes me wonder, are you aware, or was the council aware, of any other place where there's a bill that includes cannabis and tobacco when it comes to vaping together like this?
You know, that's one of the things that council decided on. They decided that since staff really hadn't vetted that, that perhaps staff should go back and look this back over again and find out whether there's any reality to it. And I think that's what it comes down to. To me, it just seems like, you know, the city needs money. There's no doubt about that. But this just seems like a chance to get a little more tax money into the city. And what better place than people who use cannabis? And I think city council recognized that we don't necessarily have to tax somebody just to get more money. And I think that's what we came down to. The original ordinance was definitely aimed at nicotine delivery, and council members made that clear in their remarks. You know, and Hannah, I'm still a little surprised at the Boulder's city attitude towards cannabis legalization. If you recall, the city enacted ordinances on its legalization that were far stricter than the ones that the state came up with, and the city had to backtrack on several of those things. And I just wonder why the city of Boulder is trying to be punitive towards marijuana smokers.
Yeah, it definitely seems a little bit surprising given the reputation, I guess, in Boulder. But thank you for keeping an eye on all of this for us. That was, again, our cannabis expert here, Leland Rucker. He is the senior editor at thenewsstation.com. You can catch the Cannabis Report the first and third Thursday of every month. And I'm KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers. Leland, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And that does it for today's program. You've been listening to The Morning Magazine here on listener-supported community radio. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Is there a topic you'd like to hear covered on The Morning Magazine? Give us a call and leave a message at 303-447-9911. We play listener comments back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during The Morning Magazine. If you have news tips for us, email us at news@kgnu.org.